Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
A jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on!
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is 2 days before Christmas. This is the only time of the year that I'm right. I'm right 1 day a year. Ah, and we got Nikichi back with us. Oh, good morning, Nikichi Taifa.
Good morning. Glad to be back with Crossroads with you, Roach Martine, and our special guest. Ooh.
When did you get back from Africa, Nikichi?
Couple of days ago.
Oh, okay. Glad to have you, ladies. We got your good friend, Nicole Porter, here this morning.
Yay! All right.
We're doing a recap of 2025 criminal justice issues. And I know you got a lot to chip in. So let me start off with the grapevine first. Grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey. Social media post from December 25 claim singer Patti LaBelle secretly funded and opened the LaBelle Sanctuary Medical Center, a free 200-bed hospital for the homeless, complete with housing, cancer wards, and surgical suites, funded by her foundation and anonymous donors. While these vile posts describe a deeply compassionate and historic humanitarian effort with massive online buzz and stories of initial patients. Patty, thank you. A lot of times, as Peter Green used to say, we don't need no line, no jiving, and most of all, no signifiers. We don't need no signifying on this. She did that because she wanted to do it, and she made it possible. We said to stay out of other people's pockets, say they should do this, they should do that. Stop signifying what somebody got in their pockets and let them do what they can do. Thank you, Patty. There's other celebrities doing stuff. They don't talk about it. We don't know nothing about it. Because we haven't heard about it, don't mean they're not doing nothing. So stay out of people's pockets and let them do whatever it is they want to do to keep make things better. Patty, this is really Christmas for 250 people, a hospital that's free for folks who are in need. Merry Christmas to you, Patty LaBelle. Secondly, Michigan inmate struggles to get help from little known $19 million fund for prisoners' needs. In Michigan, revenue from incarcerated people's purchases on commissary and phone calls goes into a prisoner benefit fund. But the money is largely set idle. The fund held $19 million at the end of 2024 and has sometimes gone towards maintenance costs, like an $86,500 roofing project. Meanwhile, incarcerated people who have little say in how the money is spent have gone without basic needs like toothbrushes, deodorant, and envelopes. This is a great piece highlighting how prisons squeeze incarcerated people and their families to fund operations.
Jiggy boogie, help us.
That's what we call jiggy boogie. Most prisons have a prisoner fund, and the funds that come from the telephone commissary goes into a prison inmate welfare fund. And would you believe that funds are never used for the inmates or the incarcerated? It's for guards, picnics, cookouts. It's for little league baseball, softball teams, for the correctional staff. This is our money. We should have a say in it. And the money should be used to make sure that we increase the gate money. Gate money is people released from prison. They should get enough money when they come out of prison, at least give them a little start, at least live for a month or so. What's so scary about treatable conditions behind bars? Medicines, procedures, and specialists can be scarce in prison, or people don't get them until it's too late. In Mississippi prison, a broken arm turned into an amputation. In Minnesota County Jail, a man showing classic stroke symptoms was allegedly ignored until he collapsed and died. Woo!
Jesus.
This is terrible. In theory, all of these medical issues were treatable. And despite the many flaws in the U.S. healthcare, treatable is usually a reassuring word. In prisons, jails, and detention centers across the country, it often means something different. However, medicines, procedures, and specialists may all exist, but people may not get access to them until permanent harm or even death occurs. In many of those cases, the problem begins with prison staff not taking incarcerated people seriously when they describe symptoms. In recent reporting, former Marcy correction officer get maximum sentence for murder of inmate Robert Brooks. In March of this year, there was a video of six guards beating the inmate in the room, beating and choking him, was handcuffed and shackled. His name was Robert Brooks, and he died. As a result of that, his family filed a court case, and they went to court a couple of weeks ago. David Kingsley, a former officer at Marcy Correction Facility, was sentenced Friday to 25 years to life for the death of inmate Robert Brooks. The case marks the first time a New York State correction officer has been convicted and sentenced for an inmate's murder, according to a special prosecutor. Brooks, 43, of Greece, was serving a 12-year sentence for assault when he was beaten by officers on December the 9th of last year at the Marcy Correction Facility before dying the following day. The incident was captured on body camera. Of the 10 former guards charged in Brooks' death, one was convicted of murder, two were acquitted, one awaits trial, and six were sentenced after accepting plea deals. They got 7 years, 15 years, 22 years, and now life. I hope this sends a message that reverberates throughout the rest of the New York State. As it said, it was the first time guards were arrested, sentenced, and convicted for killing an inmate. This has been happening all over through the years. I was a victim of one of those correction officers beat down. I was paralyzed, placed in solitary, and I know how brutal and how rough these kind of beatings can be, beat downs can be when the correction officer beats you when you're shackled. And this is the first time that correction officer in New York City has been convicted and sentenced for killing and beating the inmate. Yeah. It's going to happen all over the country. I'm glad to see this happen in terms of they got to be held accountable for what they do. Thank you for making this thing a reality. And as usual, we'll close with that and say that it's Christmas, people. This is the time of the year that we're supposed to have joy and goodwill to our fellow human beings. And that's one of the reasons why I always say Merry Christmas, because I got my presidential commendation on Christmas Day. And the feeling I got from that, I try to share that feeling every day. When I meet people, every day I make somebody laugh or smile. I don't care who it is, what color you are. To me, every day is Christmas, and we should have that Christmas spirit. It's not about religion or politics. It's about what you're feeling inside and sharing that feeling to let somebody else feel good about themselves. And when I felt that, when they turned me loose on Christmas Day, I still feel that joy, and I try to share that every day. So Merry Christmas, everybody, and make somebody happy today. Say Merry Christmas even when you don't feel like it. This is your time of the year. Now we get to our topic. Our guest this morning is Miss Nicole Porter, the Citizen Project. She's been with us several times in the past, and she's very knowledgeable and informed, and I like having her on with us because she gives us the real skinny on what's going on. Ain't no jiggy boogie when you talk to Nicole. It's the real skinny. And also joining us back from a trip to Africa is our good friend and co-host, Nkechi Taifa. Good morning, Nkechi.
Good morning, Roach. I missed y'all, you know, but I know you were holding down the fort, and I think you had Andrea James on, I think it was, while I was gone. I'm so sorry I missed her, but I know y'all were rocking and rolling as you always
do. She asked about you. She wondered where you were.
Yeah, out of the country. But
well, thank you for being here, Nkechi. In 2025, key criminal justice issues include ongoing debates over policing alternatives, managing significant court backlogs, addressing systemic racial disparities, reforming sentencing laws like mandatory minimums, tracking the opiate crisis with health-focused approaches, and balancing federal mandates with local reforms, especially concerning bailed and mental health responses. We are talking to Nicole Fortes. We're going to do a recap of some of the criminal justice issues that happened in 2025 and what we expect to look for in 2026. Good morning, Nicole. And what is your take on the recap of the 2025 criminal justice system? One of the things that's hot on my plate, Nicole, is that in the federal criminal court system, 90 to 95% of the defendants plead guilty. And there's very little need for jury. Jury trials are all knocked down. Our same thing in D.C. Superior Court. Most of the defendants are pleading guilty in part because of mandatory minimums and it's tough on crime laws. And these tough on crime laws and mandatory minimums are still with us and coming back in some states. And that's one of the two of the driving forces of running this prison population up. What's your take on this, Nicole?
Yeah, it's the, well, thank you for having me. Merry Christmas. It is that time of year and it's nice to join you on a show during Christmas season. So my take is it's mixed. Certainly if you look at DC and at the federal system, given the current administration and the effort of trying to repeal laws that were passed locally in DC to revisit some of the harsh sentencing practices that were adopted at the height of the war on drugs, at the height of mass incarceration, we are going in the wrong direction. DC yes. deliberately passed laws a few years ago to revisit some of the policies that disappeared some of our young residents to prison. That would have seen them die in prison. And since the Incarceration Amendment Act passed, since IRA passed a few years ago, several folks have gotten out of prison. They're leading in the community. We had one DC resident actually get elected from the DC jail while serving a long sentence, Joel Castone. And there are other currently incarcerated residents at the DC jail, one who is on the DC, locally elected in DC to one of the advisory neighborhood commissions. Just showing the humanity that yes. still thrives behind the walls, even though given the harsh sentencing practices that you mentioned around mandatory minimums and the high plea rate, it would see people be disappeared, but people still thrive in spite of that. So I would say with all of that, the United States remains one of the world's number one jailers. We are still in this mist of mass incarceration, 50 years in, more than 50 years in, but it's mixed. We can get to some of the policies that are happening nationally that continue to reinforce that. But I wanted to share some things that might have flown under the radar for people Come who on. Don't follow some reforms that flew under the radar.
Okay.
So given the high rate of incarceration, not just nationally, but within states, Maryland passed a Second Look Act inspired by the DC Second Look mechanisms that have passed over the last couple of years. So the Second Look policy that was adopted in Maryland earlier this year and signed by the governor allows people between the ages of 18 and 25 to petition for sentence reconsideration after serving 20 years in prison. Ooh. When the bill was introduced, it was universal. It would have applied to all people who served 20 years convicted in Maryland, who were 18 to 25 at the time of their offense. But because of the political process, we know how politics can minimize and reduce the impact of things. What ended up passing was still the sentencing reconsideration policy, but there are carve outs that include crimes of a sexual nature and people convicted of killing a first responder and those sentenced to life without parole. But we think even with the carve outs that 1,000 people currently incarcerated in Maryland prisons will benefit from this Second Look change. And that law went into effect
on October 1st of this year, was passed earlier in the year, went into effect October 1st of this year, and the Office of the Public Defender in Maryland is taking up these cases and is working with petitioners, potential petitioners around that. So any of your listeners who have friends and loved ones who were 18 to 25 at the time of their offense, they may be eligible for the second look reform and should reach out to the Office of the Public Defender in Maryland to see how to help their loved one. So that's one thing that people should know about. People in the audience may not be aware of that might have flown a little bit under the radar. I have some other things to share too, but just wanted to make sure to mention that one.
Yes.
You know, Nikichi, you're there. She can unmute yourself, Nikichi.
She must have stepped
yes,
away.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I'm here.
You know, we got the call on you, young lady. What's your take on a recap of what happened in 2025? What stands out to grab you the most in terms of what needs to be done or what was done that's not fair or right that you feel we need to address this morning?
Well, one of the things I want to mention that, you know, is kind of unique to me, I would say, is that 2025 did bring home some of our very, very long held political prisoners, members of the Black Panther Party, who basically were set to die in prison. Unfortunately, some kind of, you know, passed shortly after they get out. It seems like the only way you can get out of long-term imprisonment is if you're right knocking on death's door. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But somewhere within the last couple of years, we were able to bring home Dr. Mutulu Shakur, Sundiata Okoli, Leonard Peltier, Veronica Bowers, you know. So I just want to say this was the result of hard work of activists and advocates in terms of dealing with those issues, dealing with what they call the old law prisoners, okay?
Yeah.
People who were sentenced before the elimination of parole back then in 1984, whatever,
yes.
You know, the fact that was. So I just wanted to lift up that and lift up the spirits of those who have passed as the result. But, you know, people thought that Leonard Peltier would never be able to
be released.
And even though he's under very, very strict.
He's on house arrest, isn't he?
Well, yeah, guidelines. At least we were able
he's
to.
He's on a house arrest on a reservation.
Exactly.
And the reservation is house arrest, but now you got a double house arrest.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Jamil Al-Amin, also known as H. Rap Brown, was never able to see the light of day. He just recently passed behind bars, and we're still trying to bring home Mumia Abu-Jamal, not sentenced for a federal offense, but for a state offense, probably one of the widest known political prisoners, Mumia Abu-Jamal. So anyway, those are some of the things I just wanted to lift up to compliment what our dear sister Nicole Porter from the Sentencing Project,
I want to add something to this. We got a call last week from a guy who served 25 years and he had cancer. And they wouldn't give him chemo inside. He was released 30 days ago. And he has less than 6 months to live.
Yeah.
We've got so many cases of men and women who did 20, 30, 40 years and they come out. Al Malik's brother, LaVance Green, he did 50.
Yeah.
He came out and died within 5 months and they wouldn't give him any treatment. So at the top of the show, we mentioned about death inside of prisons and who's responsible, who's held accountable. But a lot of our men and women, I'm looking at the medical care for those men and women coming out, because a lot of them are dying. And as you know, Nicole and Nikichi, Estelle versus Gamma was a Supreme Court decision that said the only people in society who has a constitutional right to free health care is prisoners. But they don't get it. They get less than what we get outside. And men and women are dying when they're upon their release. And that's one of the things I wanted to throw out in terms of what can be done to ensure that these men and women, because at the top of the show, we mentioned in Grapevine, how they had $19 million in the funds for inmate welfare fund in the state of Michigan for prisoners. This money came from the profits from the inmate commissary and the telephone. Can you imagine they got $19 million in an account that they made off of inmates inside of prison. And this money is not being used or spread out to help those men make the transition back into the community. This is just one thing in terms of this abuse of private prison companies that's providing services to institutions and how these companies are ripping us off. And these men and women are just being left in a destitute state. Last week, Nicole, I don't know if you heard it. We had a guest on. We talked about a prison in New York State, that any woman that goes to visit somebody, goes to a complete body scan, if she has menstrual pads on or IUD, she is not allowed to enter the institution. They're denying the mother or woman the right to come in and see your loved one, even though it's your menstrual time. Well, that's necessary, that's mandatory, and that's nothing you can do about it. You got to roll with it. But to deny someone the right to see your wife, your kids, and loved one because it's their time of the month, these kind of, I call it mini punishment scopes that they're using to punish people because they got the authority and the power. So I wanted to lessen some of the power that some of these folk had over our lives and our visitors' lives. And it ain't right for them to have $19 million and inmates make 10 cents an hour or 10 cents a day inside the institution. This kind of jiggy boogie got to stop. You know, this is one of the things. I got a whole list of stuff to talk about, Nicole. Let me shut up and throw the mic back to you.
Sure. Nikichi, did you want to say something? You came off mute.
You know, I just wanted to say that it's just totally and completely invasive invasion of privacy and gender-based targeting. You know what I mean? What Roach was talking about in terms of those full body scans that can see inside your body parts, okay?
Your body cavity.
And deny entry as a result of that. I just, you know, joogie boogie, yes, Roach, all we say.
Yes. Absolutely outrageous. Yes.
We ought to call this. Go ahead, Nicole.
And speaks to that the way the system is set up, it's always to limit liberty, limit access, limit freedom. It's not about rehabilitation because they're just looking for new ways to take away liberty, including restricting people who might be visiting their loved ones in this prison in New York. Well, to try to counter this gender-based discrimination that's happening in the criminal legal system. You know, women's incarceration is not at the pace of men's incarceration, but it has grown significantly, particularly given the height of the war on drugs. And I'd say that one of the indicators of punitiveness is what we call vengeful equity in the criminal legal system. And that explains why women can get really harsh sentences when convicted of homicide or drug offenses or property offenses. And one way to address that, even though it's limited, it doesn't meet the spirit of what needs to happen, are what we call survivor's justice acts. That's where, and it's not just for women, it's for any petitioner, but women will benefit because of the way gender violence happens in society. And so in Georgia this year, a law passed, the Georgia Survivors Justice Act, that builds on similar laws that are in place in New York, in Illinois, Oklahoma, and California, that allows for, again, a resentencing hearing for petitioners who bring a claim to the court that their experience with trauma, gender-based violence, contributed to the offense that they were convicted of. And so in Georgia, because of the Survivors Justice Act, petitioners who are currently incarcerated can apply for a resentencing hearing and hopefully get resentenced if they can provide evidence that their history of gender-based violence, domestic abuse, other trauma-related trauma, including child abuse, dating violence, contributed to their crime of conviction, including homicide and other serious offenses, so that the judge can reconsider whether or not they still need to be in prison or if they can be sentenced to a lesser term of year. So that law went into effect in the summer. We know that our partners at legal services organization in Georgia, like the Georgia Justice Project, are working with petitioners there. I think a lot of women will benefit, but also men. Men have benefited from Survivors Justice Acts in New York and may benefit from Survivors Justice Acts in other states as well, like Georgia. So I just wanted to bring that up, given the what you reported out from that New York prison and the gender violence and the gender-based discrimination that's happening at the New York prison that may be helped by acts like this one for, it's at least at the sentencing phase or the resentencing phase.
I have a quick question for you, Nicole. I'm just curious. Would these measures, which I think are superb, be a threat as a result of the rollback and cutback on anything dealing with DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, or anything that seeks to rectify the harms of the past? Would these laws be at jeopardy for anything along those lines?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is a state law that passed this year, obviously in the midst of these DEI rollbacks and, let me just say, white supremacist governing by this administration. How these laws are applied is something to watch out for. I will note that a Survivors Justice Act passed in Oklahoma last year. One person was successfully resentenced and is now out under that Oklahoma Survivors Justice Act. But unfortunately, other petitioners have been denied. And because the judges, the judicial interpretation of the law has been on the side of the status quo and on the side of holding these women in prison, even if they've served decades in prison or if they've been incarcerated for several years. The statute in Oklahoma specifically, this is learning from Oklahoma, the Georgia statute is stronger, but the problems with the Oklahoma statute is that people who experience intimate partner violence can petition for resentencing. So one person petitioned for resentencing because she was sexually abused regularly by a family friend. And the crime that she was convicted was related to the family friend's abuse of her. But the judge interpreted her case as the victim and the cause for abuse not being related to intimate partner violence because she was not a girlfriend of this family friend that she ended up killing, but who the court, there was no dispute that quote unquote family friend sexually abused her, sexually assaulted her regularly over many years. And yet, so this woman was denied resentencing. I just mentioned this to say that the status quo gatekeepers of these policies, the judges, the district attorneys, the police, they are not motivated to revisit the practices that have led to long sentences. They are not moved by some of the arguments. And so in Oklahoma, the judge's interpretation has left this woman in prison in spite of what we tried to pass a couple years ago. So hopefully, in spite of the DEI rollbacks, there will continue to be ways to revisit these sentencing laws to help people return home who've been in prison for decades, given the war on drugs, given mass incarceration policies. But this is why it's mixed. There have been reforms this year, but as we see in Oklahoma, just because there's a reform doesn't mean it will result in fairness and justice. Mm-hmm. And that case is like a sheer example of that. And unfortunately, that was a sister who got denied resentencing. I also think in spite of these reforms, the racial disparities in the outcome will be significant in this era of DEI rollbacks, how that will move. The gatekeepers is a question, given some status quo gatekeepers' efforts to, you know, roll things back. So that's something for us to watch out for, to shine a light on, and to not not to bury our words, given what we're up against and given what we're dealing with these days.
You know, Nicole, if what two things or three things that you see that stands out that happened last in 2025 in terms of making it better for those men and women in prison, or even worse, what reforms that have been, because I know I've been seeing a lot of this legislation coming in, punishing and penalizing and criminalizing our youth all over the country. Some states made reforms, but those reforms have rolled back. And right now with President Trump in, out of all of the 1,000 or 1,500 pardons he's given or commutations, 85% have been to white folk. 85% of the pardons and the commutations. And our folk, as usual, we're at the bottom of the deck. We don't get none. And you're talking about the Sentencing Act. We need to find ways to get our people out of there as soon as we can get them out of there. And one thing I want to suggest before I turn it over to you is that every director of a state correctional system has the authority to extend the limits of confinement. So he can let people out for up to 30 days to go to school, hospital, treatment, et cetera. But because of the political climate and the White House position on crime, a lot of these correctional administrators and wardens are reluctant to use that. So I'm looking at what can we do or what can we push to help open up the gates? What laws or really legislation that you've seen that came down in 2025 that we can bite our teeth into and say, hey, let's get behind this to help get our people out?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to get reforms done where we can get them done, particularly in a way that can help the Black folks that have been disappeared, because you walk into any prison, any courtroom, it's unfortunate. There's a sheer disproportionate impact on the Black community. And these are community members, family members. These are sons and daughters who, when disappeared, aren't contributing to their family, and they're not providing care to their love to their elders or to their children. They're not contributing to the community. They're being warehoused. So that Maryland Act I mentioned earlier, and I know Maryland is interesting, right? And I know Nikiji has some things to say because of the governor there and some other decisions more made in other areas of social policy. But on criminal justice reform, there's been some good steps in the right direction. But even in Maryland, as I mentioned, there were carve-outs to the Second Look law. But what needs to happen is we need to help people benefit from the Second Look law. We need to provide, make sure that reentry services are provided to them so that recidivism rates and returns to prison are low in Maryland. And if we can show that that outcome is good in Maryland, then hopefully other states, particularly with Black majorities in the legislature or strong Black caucuses in the legislature, can pick up that mantle and start to adopt similar policies. I'll say that Delaware is also a state that passed a significant sentencing reform, no carve outs for what they call the Richard Mouse Smith Compassionate Release Act. It allows for sentence reviews for anyone who served at least 25 years in prison. And to those who are 60 years and have served 15 years, it also allows a sentencing reconsideration hearing. No carve-outs, no offense carve-outs. They call it a rehabilitation resentencing hearing. There's a Black Speaker of the House in Delaware. And I think Black leadership in state legislatures is an important indicator of passing impactful sentencing reform that can help address the disproportionate impact of criminal laws on the Black community, particularly the targeting that took place in the era of mass incarceration. So look to Delaware, look to Maryland. Let's look to other states where there's strong Black leadership elected and they have the authority to pass some of these re-sentencing laws, even in the midst of the national politics and these anti-DEI rollbacks that Nikiche mentioned. And let's get them done. Let's help people return home, and let's show the impact of those returns back to the community on those individuals and their families, but on also on the broader community too. So that's what I want to point people to and hope people can work on.
This is WPFW. We thank you for joining us. This is the station for jazz and justice. And when you want to know the truth, you need to tune in right here with Nikiche and Roach Brown to hear what's going on in our country.
Yes. You know, this is interesting. Nicole, Texas, Florida just executed a guy a couple of days ago. It's been 44 executions in America this year. President Biden pardoned 32 people, took him off of death row, off the federal death row. President Trump is trying to see if he can undo those commutations and get them people resentenced back to death row. Death row is on the increase across this country. As we can see that what the administration is doing is shooting and killing the guys on the boats in the Caribbean. Usually in America, you get locked up, be suspected of a crime. You get arrested, you go to court, you give it, go in front of a magistrate or a judge and get a hearing or a bond set. But now they're just executing people for suspicion. They're assuming or suspecting they got drugs. This policy of killing people, what do you see happening across this country about death penalty for us? Because as we know, the majority of the people who get the death penalty are black or brown. So have you seen any legislation come down or reform that address the death penalty?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on that. I do know there's an active death penalty abolition movement, and they're still working to abolish the death penalty. But I think, as you mentioned, it's tough. I think there have been, there will be an increase in death penalty and executions in these deep red states, given who's in the White House and their interest in using the death penalty and undermining what President Biden did before he left office. So we're in an environment where things are mixed. But I think, just like I'm pointing to Maryland and Delaware and encouraging states to follow their lead if the political environment is possible, I think that the death penalty abolitionist will do the same in states where they can. And then the challenge is to try to fight death penalty, executions and the president's interest in executing people. I'll say there was a win in Oklahoma a few weeks ago where the governor did the least of what he could do in commuting a death row prisoner
yes.
to life without parole, who was known to have an intellectual disability and should have never been sentenced to death in the first place, felony murder case. So he didn't even kill anyone. He was involved in the offense, but didn't commit the killing. So shouldn't have been sentenced to death at all. And the governor did the least that he could do. And, you know, I don't really like to pat people on the back who do the least of what they could do and took too long to do it, but he did do it, and that young man was not executed. Well, oh, it's just the truth.
You know, what's so interesting is lately I've been just seeing so much of our history that we are just penalized, realized, everything is just against us because we're black. And it just is so disheartening to see these kind of laws and that just vilify us. For no reason, no good reason, only because of how we look. I mean, when will it ever change?
As our colleague Courtney has said in the chat, it's giving eugenics, and it truly is. I mean, you know, Roach, you opened the show with an overview of mandatory minimum laws. Well, we put out, the Sentencing Project published earlier this year a paper on how the history of eugenics contributed to mandatory minimums and these long sentences and life without parole sentences, let alone the death penalty, because of an interest in disappearing young black men at the height of their reproductive years. So you disappear them for decades when they're likely to have children. And by the time they get out, you talked about medical parole and compassionate release. So releasing people a few months before they, are expected to pass. Yeah. And so this is eugenics in 2025, and the way the criminal justice system has evolved operationalizes eugenics in its targeting, racial targeting of the black community. And so we hope to have contributed to that documentation in this report we published earlier this year. We think it's important for black folks and other advocates to understand that that is a part of what explains the criminal legal system in the United States. And when we're criticizing it, when we're working to change it, to know that that's the root, and to like be centered by that, be morally centered by that, so that when we're fighting to change these things, we're fighting to reverse the discrimination that is embedded in the system itself.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, Nicole, when I was back in the throes of things, we spent a lot of time dealing with the issue of commutations and pardons, the issue of clemency. And, you know, Roach was talking about stuff within the past year. Things seem to have made a 360-degree turn with respect to the types of people who are getting clemency and pardons. I'm hearkening back to the January 6th insurrection.
Yes.
Like, do you have any commentary with respect to where we are with respect to issues of clemency now?
You know, I'm not following that either as closely as others are. But, you know, I did see where Ayanna Pressley, Representative Ayanna Pressley, published a report where she documented the racial disparity in the current president's commutation and clemency outcomes, and that Black people are underrepresented. Black petitioners are underrepresented in receiving commutation and clemency. You know, it points to how, even though there was a strong fight for that during the Obama administration, that that has been a strategy of criminal legal reform advocates. That is a strategy around discretion, and it matters who was in the White House.
It matters
at the state level who was in the governor's office. These are objective criteria that these executives use, and if they are racially biased, their racial bias shows up in those decisions. And that is what's happening with the president's clemency and commutation decision-making. In addition to him being influenced, I think there's no doubt that he's influenced by who has access to him. So there's other factors related to the current administration's use of clemency, but it's clear that it's about bias and discretion. And if the decision maker is biased, if they're racially biased or gender biased, that bias is going to show up in the decisions they make.
If you want to hear say anything to Nicole or Nikichi or Roach, please call 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. I have one question. Now, I recently learned that that clause in the 13th Amendment that says everyone is free except in the case of incarceration, it has reverted in some states. How can we get more states to acknowledge that and to erase that, eradicate that off the books? What do we need to do?
Well, I think that is happening at the state level. There's a national campaign to abolish the 13th Amendment. I know that there are active efforts within states to go through the ballot referendum process to change state constitutions around repealing the 13th, the state version or analog of the 13th Amendment. I know there's been successful outcomes in Colorado and Alabama. And I think there are active efforts underway in Texas and New Jersey. So I think folks can support that national campaign. And if they're in a state where there's an active ballot measure, get involved and certainly vote for the ballot measure when it shows up on their ballot. Hopefully next November, there will be some states that will ask the question on their ballot during the midterm election, and residents of those states can make the right choice in voting for it. Otherwise, I think follow the issue nationally. You know, certainly to repeal the 13th out of the U.S. Constitution, long process for that. There's a lot of hurdles to overcome. So I think a pathway to that is working within states where it's possible to repeal that out of state constitutions. And there should be some choices next year for some of the callers in those states.
I know there's a call on the line, but I just want to make sure that folk know that we're talking about the prison slavery exception clause, the 13th Amendment, not the 13th Amendment as a whole. I just want to make sure.
Thank you, Attorney.
Yes, thank you
Attorney
clarifying. Thank you for clarifying that, Nikki G. Yes, sorry. Yes. Apologies for misspeaking.
No, we'll take a first call. You're on air, please. Question or comment?
Good morning, Roach.
I knew it was you.
Good morning, Miss Martine. Good morning, Nikki.
Yes,
and good morning, Miss Porter.
Good morning.
This is Rick calling long distance from Germany. And I understand that Mumia Abu-Jamal has quite a bit of support here in Germany. And I also understand that he was carrying a weapon when he was accused of the murder of the police officer, but the weapon he was carrying was not the caliber that was used on the police officer. So I'm asking, how can this man still be in prison when they know he did not commit the murder of that officer? And if they reduced his sentence from death penalty to life in prison, why won't they release him if they know he's innocent?
Good. You want to handle that, Nicole or Nikichi?
Well, I just want to say there's been a lot of litigation around the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. There have been witnesses who have come up to say that he was not the killer. There have been other witnesses who were silenced. I mean, there's just a whole lot of error that's gone on in the case. He's suffering significant medical issues right now. And you're right, Rick, from Germany. He has support all over the world. I mean, all over the world. I think he's probably the best known political prisoner since Nelson Mandela, if you really want to know. So that's the question of the century. Why is he still imprisoned and incarcerated, even if he had have been the killer? I mean, I'm just saying, even if the amount of the decades upon decades upon decades that have passed, it's just unconscionable, totally incomplete.
He's been in over 35 years.
Oh my God, over 50 years. I think he was around the early 1980s. I can't even do the math. The early 1980s.
Right, that's 45.
You
know,
it's compassion and sensitivity. When you get somebody complete control over your life, they use their own biases and prejudice come up. And for some reason, when the government make a mistake, they're going to defend it until they're like, they're doing this guy, Kilmer Abrego, the Spanish guy they're trying to send back to deport. They said they want to send him to Africa. It's the bottom line. Let me throw this in. Jeanine Pirro is this United States attorney for D.C., and they came out with, and she's pushed the thing of taking our kids to trial, lowering the age of taking the kids as adults, as young as 14, to court. This is happening all over the country. All the reforms that came down as a result of George Floyd are being rolled back. And every state I look at virtually has some kind of law or legislation designed to punish, penalize, criminalize, or incarcerize our youth. And we got a state's attorney, a U.S. attorney in D.C. that's pushing this. And our youth, as we know, again, kids going to get in trouble if they ain't got nothing to do.
That's what
they
do.
Don't have nothing to do. But yet when they break the law, they hold them for 40, 50, 60 years. The guy I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, he did 25 years. He went in at 19. He come out now, he got cancer. He got less than 6 months to live. He didn't get the proper medical care inside. He's not going to get it out of here. And it's too late. So we're talking about recapping what's happening in 2025. I'm concerned about all these states who pass more punitive, restrictive laws impacting our youth nationally. What can be done or what can we do to help counter some of this? Because all them laws and reforms that came down when he killed George Floyd are being rolled back. It's like it never even happened.
So I think what people can do, like, and if, you know, I think a lot of your listeners are in from Maryland, some of your listeners may be calling in from Georgia, support the resentencing teams of the petitioners going up and to help people come home. You know, what needs to be shown in the resentencing hearings, their lawyers of the petitioners will have advice on that. but be willing to be a part of someone's reentry circle if they're successfully resentenced. We need to start networks, reentry networks, to support people to come home, to keep them out. You know, people are being released at a time when the labor market is declining, when options for employed work might be weaker than they were 15 years, likely are weaker than they were 15 years ago. So we really, if we want to change norms, and it really is, what is like the Black community doing to stop people, to help people from going inside, and then to welcome people when they come home, given this country that we live in, and given how the criminal legal system is set up, given eugenics, which we've talked about earlier, given the harshness for these political prisoners that Nikichi brought in to the conversation, like, how can the Black community wrap our arms around folks, given that we are living in this country that wants to see us disappeared, that wants to see us fail. Yes. So what can we do? And I think we need to figure out networks and support systems to help the hundreds of thousands of people that will be released nationally, and within each state, the likely tens of thousands of people that will be released without any sentencing reform, number one, and for people who do benefit from these sentencing reforms, like in Maryland, like in Delaware, like in Georgia, reentry supports for them. There are groups that are supporting them. It's not enough. So how can different community-led organizations, how can different folks who are listening to this call participate and help? We need to join local groups that can help support people who are exiting prison, to help to wrap them in community arms, so that you know, to help them avoid getting returned and getting disappeared.
You know, you just said something that's interesting. We need to wrap our arms around those folks who are coming out of prison, but a lot of the folks in the street don't even have arms, even wrap.
That's true. Know,
and you got guys that come out here, the guy did 50 years. He's 72 years old. He seen his parole officer, and the parole officer asked him, what's your plans or prospects for employment? He never had a job in his life. He'd been in prison 50 years. He's in his 70s. And who's going to hire a 70-year-old man with the job market being what it is, with the economy being what it is? We got men and women walking the streets like go homeless. They come out of prison after 50 years, and everybody in their family has died. Their neighborhood is gone. All their contacts are gone. So if we don't step up to the plate and help them, somebody's going back. And I think one of the reasons why we did the show, a recapping of what happened and what's happened in 2025, is that the crime rate is going to escalate. I don't like to say that, but when you got this many people, they close down the Job Corps. That's 30,000 kids from the inner city that go away to the Job Corps and learn a trade. That's been eliminated. You got folks right now for the food stamp program. Congress gets $79 a day for free food. Each congressman can eat $79 worth of food free every day at Capitol. That's $2,320 a month. The average salary or the average pay
family
for a SNAP benefit is $188 a month. So the congressman can get all these benefits and all these pluses and joys and little things on the side, and we don't get nothing but time on top of time.
So what can we do?
You said know, it.
Exactly.
We got to come together.
I asked my grandmother, who's still with me, I said, what can we do? We need to teach people how things were before the government came involved. So my grandma, when I came in to visit her yesterday, she had a pot of beans on the stove. And anybody that came in the house, she offered them a bowl of beans.
Yes, yes.
It's not that expensive compared to what else, you know, given how high these grocery bills are out here. So we need to get back to basics. The answers are in our own families or in the community. We need to get back to that. And we need to welcome people home. Churches need to put out, churches and other community spaces need to put on a pot of beans and welcome people to come through for their bowl.
I know what you mean. I grew up like that. We kept a pot of beans and black eyed peas and cornbread on the stove. And I'm a beanologist. I'm a specialist in beans because we ate them every day. And that's my favorite food is baked beans. So before we close, Nikichi, you want to say, get some closing remarks before we got a few minutes before we leave?
I just want to say, going back with the thread, we were just saying, we used to practice mutual care, back during the enslavement era, after the enslavement era, Jim Crow, apartheid era. We communities came together and we helped and we supported each other. We need to get back to that. So I just want to say in closing, I know you always say Merry Christmas, Roach, but I also want to say Happy Kwanzaa, you know, because it's all about unity and self-determination and working together and pooling our money and having faith and creativity and purpose. So that's what I want to leave out with our listeners with this season.
Yes, and I would like to add that I think it's very important that we need to start practicing love and respect. We need to understand who the enemy is, and it's not each other.
Thank you. Go ahead, Nicole. We got a couple of minutes. You want to give some closing remarks, Nicole Porter of the Citizen Project?
I can't say anything other than what y'all have said, other than I agree. And yes, it is a time to reflect on the unity that's possible in the spirit of Kwanzaa and in the spirit of the season. And we need to get back to it.
There you go. You know, there's something that the truth is, none of us really know how much someone else is hurting. We could be standing right beside someone who feels completely broken or is fighting the battle of their life and never even realize
Corby's, it. Corby's always, trying to say something.
Always be kind. We got 2 minutes. That, you know, our time is up. We got 2 minutes before we leave. I want to say thank Nicole Porter for joining us. Glad to have you back, Nikichi. Courtney, you got 1 minute before we leave. Can you do it in 1 minute?
What comes with the beans is political literacy and education and awareness. Everybody participate. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Okay. That's right. That's our right.
Our time is up. Let me finish this. I was reading something and it just cut me off. You know, team, this is Christmas. And everybody's hurting. Our whole country is hurting. Everybody we meet is going through a traumatic experience. And these bad experiences, this ain't going to last long, folks. Bad times don't last long. You got to bite down, knuckle under. We can come out of this. We went through worse than this, baby. And the truth is, none of us really knows how much someone else is hurting. We could be standing right beside someone who feels completely broken or is fighting the battle of their life and never even realize it. Always, people, always be kind to somebody, because we all are going through what we're going through, and it won't last forever. Good times will come there right around the corner. And remember, this is Christmas. Make somebody happy. Make somebody smile. If you don't enjoy Christmas, tell them happy Halloween, happy Easter, and watch how people laugh and respond to you. Make somebody feel good. This is what Christmas is all about. I want to thank Nicole Porter from the Citizen Project.
Yes.
And, of course, our dynamic co-host who just got back from Africa. Did you bring me any coconuts, Kanakichi?
I'll bring you a kiss on the cheek. How's that?
Okay, I'll take that.
Is that okay, Martin?
That's okay.
So we want to thank you until next week. We'll see you next week. If anybody say Merry Christmas to you, make them smile. I don't care. If you want to feel better, I don't care how bad you're feeling. Make somebody smile or laugh today and watch how good you feel. Watch how small your problem begin to shrink. Spread joy and goodwill. This is what it's about. And Merry Christmas, everybody. Remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Nikichi.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nick, and you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Today we are joined by Dr. Kat Polk, Executive Director of DC Village Collaborative, DC Village Collaborative, DCVC, a nonprofit organization with a 501.